they said, my name is Stephen. First thing I want to do is thank you for coming. I know that for some of you, this is not what you would normally have been doing. On a Thursday night, you got invited by somebody. Maybe you went to our booth that we had out the past couple days. You got handed a flyer or something like that, and you decided to come tonight. And maybe this is a step out of your comfort zone, and that's kind of a big deal. And so I just wanted to start by saying thank you for coming. My name is Stephen. Like, I think I've said that twice now. Three times? Well, I'll just keep saying it randomly through the presentation tonight. My name is Stephen. That's four. Okay. So I've been on staff with InterVarsity. That's the group that's hosting this event tonight. We call it IV sometimes. I've been involved with IV as a student or on staff for 20 years. This is my 20th year, actually, involved with InterVarsity. What else do you need to know? I have a family. My wife, Jessica, is also on staff. I have a son, Noah. He's 12. And a son, Jack, he's 9. And they're actually here tonight. That was nice. Thanks for coming, you guys. There she is. Okay, so over the last two decades, being involved in InterVarsity, I don't think I'm exaggerating when I say that I've had hundreds of conversations with people about who God is and who God isn't. I've had conversations with Christians about this. I've had conversations with Muslims, with Hindus, with agnostics, with atheists. I've had conversations with people that want to talk to me about this. I've had people that don't. So one of my favorite places or times to have these conversations is when those preachers come on the campus. You know who I'm talking about? The screaming preachers who are like, everyone's going to hell but me, those guys, right? And so I kind of work the crowd. Well, because they always draw a crowd, right? So I kind of work the crowd and I say, what do you think about this guy? And do you really want to talk about who God is? Because I'd like to have that conversation with you. And so one time I was out there and I saw this guy, and no joke, he was one of the hugest men I've ever seen. So like this, just ripped, huge guy. Like he was either on the basketball team or a giant. One of those two. And he was like listening intently. And I was like, it looks like he's listening pretty hard. I'm going to go and ask him what I think. What do you think? So I went up and I said, what do you think about this guy? And he just looks way down at me. Like, and I was like, okay, cool. So that was one of my shorter conversations on this topic. I've had conversations that last 30 seconds. I've had conversations that last hours about this. I'm in a conversation that has actually lasted two decades about this topic with a guy that I went to school with when I was a freshman. I really like having conversations like this, and so I feel really privileged to be able to speak tonight on this topic of who God is and who God isn't. The reason I like it the most, I think, is because I'm a Christian, and I really like being a Christian. I really like the relationship that I have with God. It's brought me a lot of freedom. It's given me a lot of opportunities to love other people. It's given me peace. I have found that I can be intelligent and fully engage my mind and my heart and follow God. I don't have to just have a blind faith. And I like to share with people that maybe have a perception of God that is keeping them away from a relationship with Him. I like to share why I actually like being a Christian. And so that's kind of what I want to do tonight. My goal tonight, I just want to lay it out there, is not to debate or lecture or scold you from up front. Maybe you've been to these kinds of things before and you've left feeling that way. That is not what I plan to do tonight. So you can relax. I'm not going to do that. I just want to take a humble look at some perceptions and some misperceptions of the Christian God, to look at who God is and who God isn't. And whether it's like stereotypes that we have or miscommunication that's happened or actual past experiences, something that somebody said to you or did to you that is leading us to some of these stereotypes and misunderstandings, tonight I just look forward to clearing the air a bit. Beyond all those things, who is God really? And who isn't He? Just a note before we dive in, I'm going to be telling you some stories about myself and other people and their experiences with God tonight. I'm also going to be quoting some passages and some sentences from this book, from the Bible. And I know coming into this that there's a lot of stereotypes even about this book. And so you might be wondering, like, why is he using that? The reason I am is because I want to do this right. I want to really talk about who God is and who God isn't. And I can't just do that with anecdotal evidence. I want to go to the source and talk about who he really is. So don't clam up. My invitation to you is don't clam up if I'm using the Bible and that's weird to you. I just want to do it right tonight, okay? So I'm going to talk to you about three things. Three perceptions of God that many of us have, and how my experience and the source, the Bible, actually says these are false. Okay, so the three things that I'm going to be talking about tonight are: God isn't a cosmic killjoy. Okay? The second thing is that God isn't this guy. All right? And the third thing I'm going to be talking about is that God isn't a cruel father. The way this is going to work is I'm going to talk for a little while, and then you guys are going to be given the opportunity to split up and talk about what I just talked about for a little while. Because I don't want it to just be a lecture. Here's what I think. Now go home. We want you to be able to have some conversation before you go. But for now, let's get started. The first thing I want to talk about is that God is not a cosmic killjoy. I wanted to start tonight with what I think is the most basic perception of God, and that he's a drag. He's no fun. Following him is just about the rules, like do this, don't do that, mostly don't do that, right? He takes whatever choices or freedoms we have away from us. He's a bummer. He actually, whatever joy we have, he takes away. That's a perception that a lot of people have. I think they had that when I was in school. It's the most common perception of God I hear now when I have conversations with people. I had one friend in particular in college who thought this about God, and I want to introduce him. Here's Mark, right? Obviously, super high value on fun, right? Super high value on doing whatever he wanted, right? Having a great time. That's why Mark was so confused about me, because I was a Christian. And he just couldn't line that up in his mind, because his perception of God was, I can't do anything I want anymore, right? I can't have fun. There's no freedom. To Mark, God was a total bummer, a slave driver, a freedom smasher, a cosmic killjoy. And he also had a lot of perceptions of what a Christian was, what a God follower was. And I didn't fit many of those. What he thought of was not what I fit. And Mark is not alone. Lots of times in college, when I would tell people I'm a Christian, their first question would be, "What do you do for fun? Right? Like, what do you even do on the weekend?" That was not a very good impression. What do you do? Isn't it just a bummer to follow God? Don't you always feel tied down? Here's the thing. For me, following God has never been that. He has not been that cosmic killjoy. First of all, that thing that I just showed you, that's the tip of the iceberg of the fun that I had in college. Oh, I wish I was back. Oh, I have plenty of fun now. But that was fun, okay? So, like, the other thing is, I follow a lot of you on Facebook. Does that sound weird? That sounds a little weird. I saw that. That's weird. Don't Facebook stalk you. I follow a lot of you on Facebook. You university students, you exhaust me with how much fun you're having and the time of night you're having that fun. God, as far as I can tell, is not telling any of you, oh no, only that late, right? That's not how he works. It's just this unfortunate perception, I think, that keeps people from examining what following God would actually be like. Second of all, I have experienced something beyond fun and happiness in my relationship with God. I've experienced a lot of freedom and joy. That freedom has brought me something deeper. God has, through other people and through the Bible, through my relationship with him, he's challenged me and made it possible for me to do things I never thought I'd be able to do. Following him has freed my heart up to forgive people that I never thought I'd be able to forgive. And if you're looking for joy, don't look much farther than that, to be able to forgive somebody that you never thought you'd be able to. He's opened my eyes and my home and my life to people I would never have paid attention to before. He's promised me peace that goes beyond all understanding in my darkest moments, and there have been plenty of those. Most of all, he's freed me up from a life of crushing regret and guilt. Having a real, vibrant, active relationship with Jesus doesn't kill joy. It actually releases it. The Bible talks a lot about this. Oh, K-Strauss is still up there the whole time, looking over my shoulder. This is something that Jesus himself said in Matthew 11. He said, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light." I want to serve that God. I want to follow that God who's like for me, he's behind me, patient with me, forgiving of me. I'd rather follow that God than a world that is none of that. And so I want to tell you the truth right now. Stand up in front of you and tell you the truth. He's not a killjoy. He actually releases joy in your life. Okay, now we get to the fun stuff. Who God is it? Number two. This guy. Okay. Does anybody recognize this picture? Or does anybody have like a grandma or an aunt or a babysitter that has this picture up in their house? I see those hands. Yeah, okay. Something like this guy, right? Okay, so my grandma has this picture, or had this picture, up in her guest room where I would sleep. She also had this picture. These two people, and these pictures were huge. This is Pinky and Blue Boy. Very classic pictures, I guess. And that Blue Boy would terrify me. It's like, I would wake up and he'd be like, "Good morning." Okay? So, here's the thing. My grandma loved these pictures, and she loved this picture, and this is how she had it set up. Right above my bed, in her guest room. And so I remember going to sleep like, "Good night, Grandma." Like, "Ugh, don't leave." These people, okay? So, what a big happy family. Okay, so, this Jesus, this picture of Jesus, I actually grew up with him. With this picture of Jesus and other pictures like it. And so it's kind of weird, it's kind of strange for me to say that this isn't Jesus. But this isn't Jesus. I'm going to press into this a little bit, even though it may make some of us uncomfortable, but I think this is important tonight. I'm not sure if you saw this news back in December, but a new picture of Jesus has emerged. A bunch of folks got together, really smart people, forensic anthropologists, archaeological scientists, Israeli historians, people like that. They all got together, and their purpose was to create an image of what Jesus likely would have looked like based on these things. Their studies of humans in the first century, archaeological discoveries of human remains in the area Jesus grew up, lived, and died, biblical accounts of Jesus' lineage, his genealogy, and I like this one. I thought this one was funny. "Not a small amount of common sense concerning his race and ethnicity." Okay? So here's the picture that came out in December of Jesus. Okay? So I noticed some differences here. The things that pop to me are the hair, which I don't know who Jesus' stylist is in that top picture, but it's kind of like, not permed, right? But it's straightened and then curled with a big curling iron. I know this because my wife does this. Actually, that hair kind of looks like my wife's hair. I never thought of that. That's not my notes. That kind of looks like... Okay, so the hair is different. The eyes, I don't know if you can see it up on the top, just piercing blue, right? Not so much on the bottom picture. And then I noticed something about their skin color, right? The picture on the bottom, a lot less white, right? Am I the only one that is noticing that? Something happened over 2,000 years of our understanding of the image of Jesus. Do you see the difference? Do you see what happened? something has happened, right? Something's been altered. And I believe that with that alteration, there's been a change of how we see Jesus in the church and around us. Why am I talking about this? Who cares? You might be thinking, who cares, right? Who cares if the vast majority of images we have of Jesus are white when he actually wasn't white? Who cares that I have talked to actual college students that have told me that they think Jesus was an English-speaking American? Who cares? Who cares that a journalist asked Martin Luther King Jr., well, then why did God make Jesus white? Who cares? I think we should care. What's the big deal? I have a couple reasons why I think it's a big deal. The first reason is that something about this suggests that we can make Jesus whoever we want him to be. And people did. I've researched. All you have to do is look up, why is Jesus white? And you're going to get some scholarly articles about this. That people purposefully altered his appearance to make the majority, the religious majority, more comfortable. And that didn't just happen a long time ago. That tradition of altering Jesus to make him be what makes us most comfortable has continued today. Here's the thing. Jesus was not a comfortable guy. He was kind of purposefully uncomfortable all the time to people. He was constantly calling religious people out for their bad behavior. That was his thing. He loved doing that. He also loved talking to and teaching and valuing people, spending time with people who were on the fringes that no one else wanted anything to do with. And he valued generosity and kindness and selflessness above power and position and financial gain. The church, it's the church's fault, okay? There's no way of getting around that in the research I was doing. Has altered that Jesus into something different. And I think that's a big deal. Here's another reason I think it's a big deal. If the way we present God even gets close to suggesting to anyone that having light skin is better than having dark skin, something's wrong. Okay? That's not good. If we even get close to saying white is better than brown, that's a problem, right? Not only is that the opposite of what I believe Jesus would want, it can lead to other questions about what it means to be a follower of that God for many people. It can lead to the question of, will I be valued if I'm of a certain race rather than another, or have a certain upbringing, or come from a certain place in the world? Okay, let me pause and just quickly address an objection I've heard when I've talked about this before. I've had people ask me, isn't saying that Jesus looked like a Middle Eastern man doing the same thing? Isn't that valuing one race over another? I would posit tonight that that's not the same thing, because Jesus was a Middle Eastern man, right? And so it's the alteration that's the problem. It's the alteration of truth that can lead to those questions I just mentioned. If this image was changed from, if a person looks at this image and says, if this image was changed from someone that looks like me to somebody that looks different, what does that mean about me? Am I valuable to God? What happens, whether we like it or not, is that God can be perceived as exclusive. And what I mean by that is only for one certain type of person, and not inclusive, that God is for everyone. Nothing gives me more pleasure than to stand in front of you tonight and to tell you this truth. God is not exclusive. He does not value one person over the other based on their ethnicity, culture, or upbringing. You're thinking of the world. That's the world. The world does that. And many of us in this room have felt the pain of that. God has felt the pain of that too. And he is not like that. you've probably heard this verse that I'm about to read to you, or at least heard of it, because it's the most quoted sentence in the Bible. I'm going to read it to you right now. It's John 3:16. It says, "This is how God loved the world. He gave his one and only Son, so that everyone who believes in him will not perish, but have eternal life." I want you to notice something special in this familiar statement tonight, and that is that there are no qualifiers in this statement about who can believe. Nothing that indicates any standard of upbringing, of culture, of race or gender, of educational or financial or social status. The word I see here is everyone. You see that word too? And I looked it up. That's what he actually said. Everyone. That's big. I also want you to know something else about him. That Jesus spent his entire next 3 years after this was written, and his final 3 years actually, living that concept out. Those things that I mentioned before that he did, that he loved to do, call religious people out, spend time with people nobody else would, those kinds of things got him in a lot of trouble. So much trouble that he got killed for it. He did those things to show us that God does, in fact, love the world. He loves everyone. And there's this misperception that says you can only have a relationship with God if. And God isn't like that. He's not exclusive. And if you read this book, and I encourage you to do that, or to read it with somebody else, or to engage in conversation with somebody about it, it actually tells the opposite story of this misperception. It tells the story of a multiracial, multi-ethnic, multi-generational faith that broke through oppressive views of who was valuable and who wasn't, like no other movement has in history. Jesus isn't for one gender or one race or one social group. He doesn't value one over the other. He's not exclusive. He's inclusive. Whether it's this picture that has led you to believe that faith in God is exclusive, or the words of someone in church, or your own misperceptions, I want to say to you tonight, God wants to adopt you into his family. He wants you to become a follower of his, and it's open to you. I'm going to say one more thing that's not in my notes. After this talk, don't go to your grandma's house, take down the picture and say, "Grandma!" Okay? That's not my point. Don't go home for Christmas and be like, "Ooh, baby Jesus is looking a little pale." That's not helpful. Okay? That's not my point tonight. Okay? I want you to hear my point, which is that we have in so many ways changed Jesus from what he actually is. And when we do that, we send the wrong message. He's inclusive. He's not exclusive. Don't be a jerk to your grandma. Jesus would also tell you that if he's standing up in front of you tonight. Okay, the last thing is that God isn't a cruel father. Okay, let me hold off on that. Christians have this weird language. Every group does, right? If you hang with a group, you come up with your own language, right? Christians, weird, okay? Christianese, I've heard it called sometimes. I brought a friend to church one time and I was like so embarrassed because I don't think he understood anything the pastor was saying because it was all washed in the blood and slain in the spirit and weird stuff like that. And I was like, just talk normal. Okay, so we have a lot of things that we say over and over again. One of those things is the word Father. We use that a lot to refer to God. And we do that for good reason. The Bible says over and over again that that's who he is. The problem with the word Father is that that word can trigger some things in some of our lives that lead us to believe something about God that isn't true. I had a good friend in high school, and he had a severe distaste for the word Father. His biological father had left before he was born. Never in the picture, just gone, absent. His stepdad was the scariest guy I've ever met, even scarier than that guy on the campus mall that one day that I tried to have a conversation with. Terrifying stepdad. Verbally abusive of his mom, and often of him and his siblings. The kind of guy that demanded perfection, and even when he got perfection, he wasn't satisfied. Eventually, they caught his stepdad cheating on his mom in my friend's bedroom. And then his stepdad just left him in the lurch. A mom of three kids. The concept of a father was so detestable to my friend that whenever I talked about who God was to me and we neared father territory, he would just shut off. Because to him, a father was something very specific. Distant or absent, unconcerned or dictatorial, even abusive. That's the father that he knew. Cruel. Unfortunately, that's an all too common experience. And I know, even as I'm talking, there are people that are really connecting with that. Father, that word is hard for some of us. It gets translated then onto our view of God when we hear that word over and over again when we're in places like this. But I want to take pleasure in telling you the truth again, that God is not that kind of father. That is not the kind of father figure that Jesus is. I spent 5 minutes making this slide. That's how easy it was to find what the Bible actually says about the father that God is. I think if I took an hour, I could have a slide of 100 of these that are different than that kind of experience that many of us have had with our earthly fathers. What the Bible says about God is that he's loving, and he lavishes that love on us. It says that he's merciful. It says that he takes the place of father for people that are fatherless. And he protects the people in need of most protection in those days, which were widows. It says that he gives good and perfect gifts, and that he loves to do it. That's a different kind of father. I remember when I became a father for the first time. There's Noah when he was first born. Do you recognize that picture, Noah? Where are you? He's somewhere in the crowd right now. He's 12 now. This was in 2003. That's Noah. Me and him hanging out on the grass. I don't know if we did that a ton, but I guess this is what we're doing here. Noah was born in 2003. Okay. Isn't he cute? Wow, wonderful. And by the way, I asked Noah permission to talk about him this way. He's a different person now. When he was a baby, he was cute, okay? But... okay. That was about it. he didn't do anything for me. Didn't do any chores. Right? Didn't bring any income in. Right? Just this baby. Couldn't talk. Not very much fun. Couldn't tell me how great I was. What's the big deal about being a father, right? So this looks cute, what he's doing here. But this is very deceptive about what he would do to me. His favorite thing was get as close as he could to my face, especially when I was holding him, and then do something nightmarish. Either spray snot into my eyes and blind me, puke into my mouth, or take a dump down my shirt. And then he would laugh like it was in the plan the whole time. Our friends would ask, oh, what's it like having a baby? We were kind of the first of our friends to have a baby. What's it like having a baby? This is no joke how I explained it to them. Imagine having the rudest guest ever come over to your house. Maybe he was invited, maybe he wasn't. In our case, he wasn't invited. Maybe that's TMI. Dude eats all your food, finds your credit card, spends it all, racks up the whatever debt online, tears it up, okay? When he's done with that, goes diarrhea all over your couch, okay? Then this is the worst. You're tired, and you want to go to sleep, and you're right on the edge, you know, that sweet spot. You're about to cross over, and this guest comes into your room and screams as loud as he can in your ear every time you're trying to fall asleep. We had this guest there with us when he was first born, and she was leaving, and she said, staying with you guys was the best birth control I've ever had. I love you, Noah. Here's the thing, okay? Even then, I loved him more than anyone else I'd ever met in my life. I have loved Noah intensely ever since I saw the plus on the pregnancy test. It was like, boom. What? This thing opened in me. I was a crazy man the weeks before he was born. I couldn't wait to see him. I couldn't wait to hold him. I couldn't wait to name him. I couldn't wait to show him off. When he was born, I almost fainted with pleasure. I mean, there's all sorts of reasons you almost faint. It was sick. But other than that, I was like, how can this be so gross and I'm so happy? I was in love with this kid. I would literally do anything for him. Die for him? Whatever. No question. And it's been like that from the beginning, since he was a little lump, to now, when he's a middle schooler. I would do anything. I love him. I have been overcome with love for him. He's the best. I love you too, Jack. That was great too. That is what I want you to imagine when you hear the word father. This guy, this God, who just is obsessed with you. He loves you. And you could puke in his mouth. And he would love you. And I mean, constantly, I'm like denying him. I'm not doing what he wants. He loves me anyway. It's incredible. He forgives me. His love for me is unconditional. It's joyful. It's intense. It's life-altering. When Noah was born, when he was a newborn, I remember being up all night with him, comforting him, holding him, and thinking, what's wrong? Why didn't you realize that it's me? I'm not some scary giant. I'm not going to hurt you. I'm your dad. That's God's position with us. That's his father role. We're screaming and we're pouting and we're looking for him, and he's right there. And he's wanting us to recognize who he is and who he isn't, and that he wants to be part of our lives. I'm gonna close with that thought. I'm gonna give you one more thought. I'm gonna invite you into some things. One is that we're gonna split you up into smaller groups to just kind of talk about what you heard and what you think, and if you have any questions, stuff like that. There are people around the room that are gonna be leading those groups. They have questions to ask, or else you can just talk. That's fine with me. We're gonna give you 15 to 20 minutes to do that. I wanna invite you to engage in that and to open up. If you have questions, if you have thoughts, that's a time for you guys to share that with each other. That's the first invitation. The second invitation is that you would, if this is intriguing to you, that you would come back. InterVarsity meets every Thursday night at 7 in this room. And also, this is our large group, that's what we call it. We also meet throughout the week in small groups, groups of 5 to 10 people. And we actually are in the midst right now just reading through an account of Jesus and just following him around and kind of asking, like, is this guy worth following? There are signups, I think, in the back for small groups available to you. Here's the third invitation I want to make. Over spring break, we're going to Catalina Island for spring break. It's going to be awesome. Along with swimming in the ocean and sleeping out under the stars and frolicking with dolphins and buffalo. Yeah, there are buffalo on the island. Three times a day, you get to have conversation around stories about Jesus with other people. If you feel like this is something I want to examine more, and you're thinking, I never have time to do that, here's some time to do it. Join us over spring break on Catalina Island off of the coast of California. It's incredible. And if you're looking for a way to kind of get closer to understanding who God really is and who God really isn't, that's the perfect opportunity to do that. There's going to be information in the back about that also. Thanks for listening. I really appreciate it. I know some of that stuff was heavy, but I hope that it was helpful for you in understanding who God is and who God isn't. How's this going to work, Amy? Should we just... Yeah, can people who are leading these groups just shoot your hand up? Okay, so there's a lot of people that are leaders of these groups. just kind of gather around. We're going to have you guys talk for about 15 to 20 minutes, and then we're going to close our meeting. Okay? Thanks, everybody.